The name is Ajay Locascio, a.k.a. Gambit. Remember it. And you're listening to the special episode of Power of X-Men. Hope you survive the experience, mon ami.
Boom! What's up, Amelia? Dayspring here with an episode of Power of X-Men. Very special episode of Power of X-Men. We did a live recording of our podcast at Lady J's Mutant and Proud event in Philadelphia yesterday. And we hosted an X-Men 97 panel with Adrian Huff, a.k.a. Nightcrawler, and Lenore Zan, a.k.a. Rogue. So we had brother and sister together at Lady J's event. I have to tell you, Familia, Mutant and Proud presented by Lady J. It's such a beautiful, beautiful one-day con. It's extremely intimate. There are cosplay contests, there are photo ops. There's a dance party, a Hellfire Gala dance party in the library at the German Society room in Philly. It is so familiar. I cannot say enough great things about yesterday. And Lady J personally customizes every badge and gift bag to folks. It's just so beautiful. Like, she gave me a Nate Gray, a Marvel Legends Nate Gray. And she was here like, every time I see Nate Gray, I think of you. I was like, because I'm his only fan. No, I kid. There has to be another Nate Gray fan out there. But I have to tell you, Lady J's event in Philadelphia is worth every penny. It's extremely affordable. Yeah, they have vendors. They have a panel, which you're about to hear. They have the artists right there at tables, and you can go up and you can have conversations, like really intimate one-on-one conversations. There's so many cosplayers. It was such a wonderful time. And I went with Slayerfest 98, aka my podcast husband, Ian, over at Slayerfest 98. Go check out that podcast. And he had a table set up with his X-Men and Buffy and Scream Pins. And we also covered the red carpet for their Hellfire Gala. We asked so many funny questions. I asked a Cyclops cosplayer, does Cyclops have a clone fetish? And another Wolverine cosplayer was like, is that adamantium? Or are you just happy to see me? Or there was also a Dark Phoenix. And I was like, what makes Jean go Dark Phoenix at a party? And they're like, if they don't have enough, I forgot what they said. It was like, if they don't have enough whiskey or something like that. Whatever they said, they didn't say something like that. They said something like, if a certain song doesn't play. But I have to tell you, I had so much fun at Lady J's event. We are definitely going to be returning next year. I'm putting a hold on my work calendar. I'm like, you cannot book me when this con is happening. It's such a difference between these bigger New York Comic Cons or even LA Comic Con, which, there's a lot of people there, and that's very fun in its own right. But sometimes it can get very overwhelming and exhausting. That to go to a con that's very intimate, where you can talk to everyone there, it's such a wonderful experience, Familia. I highly recommend Lady J's con. And it's only getting bigger as the years go on, because she gives such attention to detail to everything she does. So we hosted a panel with Adrian Huff and Lenore Zan. It was such a fun panel. We talked about them returning for X-Men 97, the fan reaction they've seen, and we opened it up to questions in the audience. And there were so many thoughtful, amazing questions. So, Familia, please enjoy this very special live taping of Power of X-Men at Lady J's Mutant and Proud event. Because of the way my Zoom records, it eliminates background noise. So when I say things like, let's make some noise, and you don't hear anything, it's not that there wasn't noise, because there was a lot of noise, but it was sort of canceled out because of the Zoom program I use. It cancels out, eliminates all background noises. That's why I'm able to record at airports. That's why I'm able to record at coffee shops when I'm on the road. So just, if you hear awkward silences, it's only because the Zoom canceled out any background noises. But Lenore and Adrian are 100% audible. And this is a very fun episode, because you really get to look at some of the behind the scenes journey they've had, especially for Adrian. This is the first time we've had him on the podcast. And he talks about how he came in for his audition for Nightcrawler and returning for X-Men 97, and what it was like to get that script for episode 5 of X-Men 97, Remember It. So, Familia, sit back and enjoy this episode.
All right, mutants. We are welcoming to the panel Nightcrawler himself, Adrian Hoff. Rogue herself, Lenore Zan.
Hey, everybody. How y'all doing? Sugar.
All right, folks, we are going to open it up to questions. But before we begin, I'm going to ask them just a few general questions to get the ball rolling. And my question for both of you is, what's it like being back?
It's amazing. Is this on? Can you hear me?
Aha. Uh-huh. There we go.
It's kind of surreal because 5 years ago, I told my voice acting agent there was an animation I wanted to be up for. I said, just tell him I was a Nightcrawler in the X-Men. And he goes, nobody cares about a 25-year-old cartoon.
Oh.
Boom.
Boom. 2 years later, he kind of, he's probably forgotten, he's a great agent. But anyway, so 2 years ago, of course, we suddenly get this call. And like he sends me this email, and I said, I recognize these lines. And the email said, Adrian might recognize these lines. And I said, no, it's because, okay, what do they do? Oh, yes, that is what I do. And then I was in, and it's quite surreal being back. And it's amazing to see the response. So thank you.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. So, yeah. People ask us what it's like. And I have to say, when we did this show 30 years ago, there was no internet. There was no social media. And so we were basically acting in a void, it seemed like. We would be called into the studio and we were all together, which was so much fun. So we got to bond and really enjoy each other's company. But, you know, we would do our work, and then they would send the tapes to Los Angeles because we were all in Toronto at the time, and then we would basically not hear anything back, really. We didn't even really know how big the show had become, and just at the end of each year it was kind of like, okay, thanks a lot for your work this, you know, for this past season, and we wouldn't know whether or not there was going to be another season or not. And then we get a call, oh yeah, come back, we're going to do another season. But they never really made a big deal of it. And we also found out recently that there was a lot of fan mail that the studio received for us that they never passed on. So yeah, so it was sad because there were all these kids that were writing to us from around the world, and we never got to write back to them, which we would have if we had known.
Absolutely.
Right? So now, fast forward to about 5 years ago, some of us were invited to come to a Comic-Con in Texas. And it was a nice reunion. We hadn't seen each other in 25 years. And the reaction from the fans at that point in time was mind-blowing for us, because people were coming up to us, telling us their life stories and how we had changed their lives and affected them in a positive way as kids, where they felt like, yeah, it's okay to be different. And, you know, we're all in this together. And so it was mind blowing. We did one more Comic-Con that year in LA, and there were 100,000 people there, and we did a panel. You weren't there at that one. You weren't there, but yes. But the reaction from the fans was so strong that we finally got the idea of what the show had done for people. So now when we got the call to come back, we were like, oh my gosh, thank you. You know, thank you to Disney. Thank you to Marvel. And thank you to the fans, because it's because of your love for the show that we're back. So thank you.
All right. So when you guys initially went in to read for Nightcrawler and Rogue, what was the audition process like? Were you familiar with these characters going into it?
I was not. And actually, I've done like, I think, two voiceovers for like Orange Juice and for something else, and narrated some medical video of how you insert a something into a stint into a heart or something. And that was the extent of my voice experience. But I had done tons of dialects in the theater and in TV and film, and I obsess about dialects. And so my agent teamed up with a voice agent who said, they're looking for this German character. No, Adrian does the German accent. And so I go in there, it's my first animated audition, and I see the script, and they say, they just don't want Colonel Klink. And so I looked at it, and I went, oh, it makes sense. I was on, you know, kind of a spiritual journey of my own, because we're all humans, and I just, something clicked in the script. I stood in front of the mic, and suddenly everything made sense. And look in your heart, I look, and I understood, like, my emotions and the character's emotions kind of clicked. It's one of those kind of lightning in a bottle things. And I just remember Dan Hennessy, the voice director, to pause after I finished that whole long speech in the Nightcrawler episode. And he looks up and he goes, he's a very passionate guy. Mm. And I looked at him like, yeah. Like, as we both kind of discovered in the moment. Anyway, so the next thing I knew, I was standing next to Lenore Zinn, Cal Dodd, and learning how to do voice acting for animation.
Well, man. I mean, you know, X-Men was only my second animation, too. I had done a few commercial voiceovers, but voice was new to me as well. And the one thing that the producers and director have said is that they were looking for serious actors who had done theater, and most of us that were cast in that original X-Men were theater actors, and who also did film and television. And so they wanted people who had a gravitas, who really could get into the material and kind of deep dive and have emotional reactions to what was going on that we could then put into our voices that the audience would relate to. And so I think that that's what made X-Men so different. Was that the storylines are real, they're universal, and we don't talk down to the audience ever. And so for me to go in there that first time, I'd only done one animated series before that. And it, interestingly enough, that was a Southern character as well. So I had played a Southerner there. I'd done Southerners in film and television, and also in musicals. I'd done musicals that had Southern accents. So I walked in and I saw the drawing of Rogue standing there with a hand on her hip and her sassy attitude. And I just went, oh, I think I can do this character. And my agent at the time said, yeah, Lenore, get in there for these callbacks, because they haven't found the right actress for this role. And I know it's because it's you. She felt that strongly. And she said that they'd been searching and searching. They just hadn't found the right actress. And I just opened up my mouth and I said, my daddy liked to kill himself when he found out I was a mutant. I remember I had me a boyfriend when I was 13. Had me a boyfriend till I kissed him. Poor boy went into a coma for 3 days. It got so if I touched anybody, just drove the life right out of him. So, yeah, I said those lines, and then I heard these screams in my ears and the headphones from all these producers in L.A. going, don't let her leave the building. That's Rogue. And that's how it happened. So the rest is history.
Woo! Thank you. So you all are so incredibly talented. It's evident that over 30 years later, we're still talking about the original series. I wanna pull on the thread that we were talking about earlier about the X-Men being so special and that you guys didn't know about it. And now that you have 3 decades removed from your performance, what do you think made that initial series so special among fans? Why do you think those characters resonate? Because I know I can speak for everyone in this audience. When we read the comics, we hear Adrian's voice as Nightcrawler. We hear Lenore's voice as Rogue. Why do you think these characters matter so much to so many people worldwide?
That's a big question.
That's why I'll let you go first.
You'll come up with something. Yes, and don't forget Tough Guy in episode 7. That was also me. What resonates? I think that there's, I know when I do the Nightcrawler, I'm expressing emotions that I think we've all felt. You know, we're all dealing with like real things. And Lenore was talking about this earlier. I think it's because it says, you know, so many of us feel different or not fitting into the norm. And here's a bunch of complete outcasts who kind of find this like group and family, and then find out that they're also half related, and but have to deal with the notion of belonging and the notion of community and family and love and all the things that everybody really works with. And like Lenore said, I'm just going to quote you all the time. I forgot what I was going to say. I took the lantern. Was on a roll. I think it may be ADHD. I don't know. My kids all are, and they go, you know, Dad, it's redditor. Just that we all have to kind of find a way of belonging and a way of being kind to each other and dealing with big emotions. And that's what the show does.
Mm-hmm. Very, very well put. you mentioned about not feeling like you don't belong, feeling that you don't fit in. Where do we fit in? I think so many young people feel that way. And I think that's partly why we appeal to people, because we are a band of misfit mutants who are hated and feared, but want to try and connect with the world and try to make the world a better place. And I think that's such a beautiful and brave, heroic goal. And so many people have that, and they're just sort of tossed aside or treated like they're, you know, nothing. And so I think it's like there's a movie called The Island of Misfit Toys. I don't know, it's an old classic movie, and it's called The Island of Misfit Toys. And it's about all these toys that don't quite fit, or they have parts that are missing or whatever. It's really, look it up. It's a really beautiful film. And so the other thing is that I believe our mutant heroes are kind of like the mythology for today. So back hundreds of years, thousands of years ago, you know, they had Greek heroes and they had Roman gods and goddesses. And throughout history and all the different cultures, there are these gods and goddesses and creation stories. I think these are the kind of creation stories for our time. And they are oftentimes based on myth. You know, if you look at any of the stories, it's universal. And I think that taps into a very deep, deep knowledge that we all have that is genetic, and it helps to keep us together. And I think that the more people in the world who start to feel this connection and that, hey, we are all one and that we all are stronger together than we are apart, what a much more beautiful and kind, thank you for using that word, kind, what a beautiful and kind world we would have. So, I think that's partly why this show speaks to so many people.
All right, before we turn it over to the audience for questions, can I put you guys on the spot? Since we are professional voice actors here, Adrian, can you do your best Rogue? And Lenore, can you do your best Nightcrawler?
Ah! I know.
Look what I just did here, Familia.
Now, I see. If I do it, it's going to sound horrible.
No, it's not. Go for it. I'll just close my eyes.
Pretending someone else? Okay. So what's that line?
I can't do a German accent. Okay. Either. Auf Fräulein. That's about it.
It's like Freaky Friday, but with the X-Men.
I know.
This is why you're well cast.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Familia, we're going to open up to questions here. Does anyone have questions? Just raise your hand and stand up. Rogue in the front, right there. Yeah, no worries. Go for it. Shout it out so everyone can hear you.
Hey, Sugar.
I think what's really resonated with me recently is how, especially with the last church.
Why don't you talk into the microphone, and then that way everybody can hear you.
That's
okay.
Very efficient.
Yeah. Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
Just so the people can hear you. Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that's really resonated with me for the past couple episodes is I'm going to say something funny, but like have a serious spin on it, like supporting women's rights, but also supporting women's wrongs, you know? And so like more recently with like,
hold the mic up to your mouth. There we go.
With more recently there. With like Rogue, like Hermie's gone, but she didn't go to the funeral and Logan, like Julie's so mad at her. And Logan says something like, everyone grieves differently. And I think the show has always had like a profound way of telling things to not just kids, but also adults. And I think now it's even more amplified. And I don't know if it's because I'm more adult and I'm seeing these things, but is that your guys' perspective? Like the eulogy that Nightcrawler gave, oh my goodness, like my fiance wanted to say very bravo. He's like, you get to see that guy. I was like, yeah, he's so cool. but like, what is your guys' perspectives on seeing not only these more adult themes, but also the complicated different shades that they all have.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You go first.
You want me to go first? Okay. I agree. I think that the writers have acknowledged the fact that our fan base grew up with us. And life is more complicated now. You're adults. And because things have gotten really bad in the sense that the pendulum has swung back in the other direction, where now we're looking at, again, you know, attacks on LGBTQ, diversity, culture, Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement, environment, climate change, issues and crises. We have upped the ante so that we are bringing you along with us and addressing issues that are pertinent and happening. And you're seeing, whether you're seeing them directly on television in the news or in the newspapers or online, you're aware of them. And so we are attempting to address those kinds of issues. The wars that are going on, the genocide that is taking place, all of these things. But again, the sad thing is we wrote this show and we recorded the show, the first season, long before, for instance, this latest war in Gaza. And it just shows you that, sadly, mankind continues to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. And they say, you know, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And so, again, there are so many universal themes that keep coming up throughout mankind's history. And that's why the show, I think, is firing on all cylinders and touching so many bases and touching people's hearts, because we've all lost people, too, with the pandemic, all of this stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And especially with the last four or five years have been really brutal on our ability to talk to each other, or to discuss things which are heavy and going on right now. And the wonderful thing about something like an animation is it allows us to play stories out there so that we can kind of imagine them in almost, it's almost like it's why we have stories as a species.
like Yuval Harari, who wrote Sapiens, who talks about that's the one thing which sets us apart from other living creatures on this earth is our ability to tell stories. Although apparently crows are getting close. They talk to each other, and if you did something bad to one crow, the rest of the crows will not. That's true. It's true. Yeah. Just Google it. But you know, the wonderful thing is that it deals with very complicated emotional things, but it allows us to play it out and watch it on the screen. And I think that's what we do as storytellers. And I think Beau DeMaio creating this first season, and whatever happened, we don't know, we don't talk about it, but there's no denying that the storytelling in this first season has been just next level. And it allows us to feel things and connect. And then hopefully when we, you know, to be more kind to ourselves. And so when we're talking to people who may have different opinions or different experiences of life, then my gosh, it's a huge world out there. You know, it's a huge world of people with very different life experiences from us. You know, I live on the west coast of Canada on an island. I get away from everything, but I've had the privilege of living in different countries, visiting different countries. And the stories and the way that people look at life is very different all over the place. That, I think, is one of the key things about this show, what it does for us as storytellers and story receivers as humans.
Mm, well said.
You just made that up.
Audience questions?
Yeah. Especially the part about the crows.
The crows, yeah, no, that's true.
Walk out for the crows. Or crow's feet for some of us. Come on up.
First off, I just want to say again, I'm starstruck here. Thank you all for the impact you've had on my life. And just how, and I'm just going to say that I'm sure everyone can agree in this room, the X-Men are better than the Avengers. Even before, and all that. But I guess my question is, well, kind of funny, if you guys had the chance to voice any other character on the show, like if they say, hey, you have the chance to voice this character for the rest of the duration, who would you want to voice?
Hmm. Okay, Ross, I'm not going to hate this. Professor X. I'll do it a little differently, but you know, that's me. I mean, Ross is amazing. Or does it not Professor? I'll do Magneto. George Hughes and I are the only two original voice actors on the series that also did the movies. George Hughes played the truck driver in, I think it was two, and in X-Men 3, I played Jean Grey's dad.
Mr.
Oh. Ian McKellen goes, I say, for illness, I say, look, I'm very troubled. And of course, right at the end of it, and Ian McKellen goes, you think your daughter's ill, Mr. Gray? And then the whole house shudders and cars and squeak fly out.
Did Brett Ratner know that you were Nightcrawler in the anime series?
I didn't.
So they weren't like Nightcrawlers on set.
It wasn't a thing.
Right. And George Uzna, if you don't know, is Beast.
Beast, yeah.
So yeah. He plays a truck driver in one of
in the first one. In the first one.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You ask it.
But thank you for, you know, you all make me want to cry when I hear you and I hear your voices and I meet you and I hear your stories. Even online, you know, like I am quite active talking to fans online when they tweet or they message through Instagram, like when posts, because you all have a story to tell and it's so emotional, you know. And I think, again, the storytelling and the emotion that we have in common, it brings us together and it makes you feel like you're not alone out there in the world. And I went to the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles the other day and I watched the birth of our universe and the galaxies and stuff. It was amazing just to remind yourself where we are in the scheme of things. And I pull back in my mind and I look at this planet and I think, we're just like a little tiny atom spinning around in space, right? So why are we so spending so much time and energy fighting each other and killing each other when we're just this big in the scheme of things? So wouldn't it be easier and better to just be together and be kind and be giving and generous and share the wealth amongst each other and look after each other? That's what a much more beautiful place it would be for everybody. So, you know, I think we're all in this together. And I think that's the beauty of the X-Men community is I think a lot of us feel that way.
A follow-up question, Lenore. When you were watching The Birth of the Universe, did you think of Deathbird's line, Milky Way Ghetto?
Yes, I love that line, Milky Way Ghetto. That is pure Bodhidharma.
I think the question also was, who would you voice if not Rogue?
I think it would be fun to do Poison Ivy.
Poison
Ivy would be fun because, you know, when I was, when I first started acting at the age of 19, I got discovered to play Marilyn Monroe in a rock opera on the life of Marilyn Monroe. That was my first big break. And I picked later in this rock musical that was all sung, no dialogue. And I played her at the age of 16, Norma Jean Baker, and then going into that breathy Marilyn Monroe, you know, sex goddess that we all know. And then coming back out the other side to dying of an overdose of pills and alcohol at the age of 36. So I was 19 when I was chosen to play that role, 20 when I did it. And I don't know if you've heard, but I have a book coming out. It's a memoir called A Rogue's Tale. And it's coming out next fall, so in October. And in it, one of the stories I tell is becoming Marilyn Monroe and playing that role. But at the time that I was doing it and playing this starring role in big, huge rock opera, the director was this older British director who had done Oliver, the musical Oliver, on the West End of London and also on Broadway. But he was coming on to me and sexually harassing me at the same time. And I had to fight against him and try to do this performance and do rehearsals. And I was 20, you know, I was my first time like away from home, really. And so, yeah, that was a very, very difficult experience, but I triumphed and I was able to come through it all. And so that kind of role, that kind of sexy kind of thing would be fun to do. And I changed my voice.
There is something I have to say that I texted Lenore after episode 5. And I've said it to her personally, and I'm going to say it publicly now too. I have known her work for 30 years. I've seen her on stage, I've seen her on the screen, and always known her to be just like a brilliant actor and voice actor. But what you did in episode 5, like I read the thing and I'm crying at the end. I mean, that was just next level brilliant acting, Lenore.
Thank you.
Woo! Yeah! All right, gentlemen in the front, and then I'll get Angel in the back.
So, I will say it's very appreciative, and I'm glad I watched your show when I was a kid on VHS. But I also want to ask a question. It's more of a Marvel team-up type thing, and so basically focused on a few wall crawlers. And so I want to know, who is your favorite version, your favorite Spider-Man, whether it's Peter or Miles, or like say in the movies, or like Ben Reilly's choice. Mm.
Do you have one?
I don't know if I have I like something about each one of the Spider-Men. I've really only paid attention to the screen ones, like the live action ones. I don't know enough.
And all I can say is really, I enjoyed the crossover when we did the crossover with the X-Men and Spider-Man. So, you know, I got to do that episode with that Spider-Man. That was a lot of fun.
Rogue was really, like, into him.
Yeah, he was definitely flirting with him. Yeah, Gambit wouldn't have been too happy about that. Well, you know, she likes to flutter her eyes. And she likes pretty boys. But it's funny, when it comes to Spider-Man, I there was this little boy in Truro, Nova Scotia, where I live, and he's 6 years old, and he's really into Peter Parker. Like, he puts on the costume, and he is Peter Parker, right? And he does all the poses and everything. So I went to a Comic-Con, and I got one of the pop toys, the Spider-Man pop toys, to take back to him. To give to his family. And so they invited me in for tea and everything. And I gave him the toy and he was all excited. And I said, so do you watch, you know, Spider-Man, do you watch it on TV with your dad or your mom? Like, what, how do you watch it? And he goes, what's a TV? And I went, what do you mean, what's a TV? Don't you watch it on a TV? He goes, no. And then he thought for a minute, he goes, oh, I know. You mean one of those old computers. Uh-huh. So I was like, oh my God, that shows you how things have changed, right? You didn't even know what a TV was. Oh yeah, oh, I know, one of those old computers. So that's my Peter Parker story.
Angel?
Hello.
Hello.
Great, you finally in person. So I know you talked about a lot of time on the original show, and my question to you is, whether or not your characters are in said episode, what are your favorite episodes from the original episodes?
Mm. You go first.
Well, I mean, it's got to be the Nightcrawler episode.
Absolutely.
I don't know, this is a terrible confession, if I've seen every episode of the original. Terrible thing. But I... We were just doing it. We were there in the studio. We were doing it. And so you record it, and then like months and months later it airs on television. And I think, you know, I was a young dad at the time. I wasn't turning on X-Men to watch them. But definitely the Nightcrawler episode, because one of the producers came to me when I came in for the next episode. He said, you know, that's the first time that any animated character has spoken so openly about his faith and used those words.
That's it. Is A Man's Worth, is that one of them?
Yeah, that's the one where they do Age of Apocalypse.
Is that the one too where Wolverine and Nightcrawler?
No, that's no. The
Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
The one where you're in a church with Wolverine.
Yeah.
I love that episode. That's such a beautiful episode. I love that one, and I love The Cure, that one, and I love A Rogue's Tale, of course. Those are, The Cure is probably that one and Rogue's Tale are my favorite ones, because you get to hear Rogue's backstory. I remember being so excited when I got that hold of that episode, and I was like, oh my goodness, we're going to get to hear Rogue's origin story. But The Cure, I mean, you know, when she tries to get rid of her powers because she thinks, you know, well, because they bring her pain, right? Her greatest strength is also her Achilles heel, her weakness, because she although she might take everybody's strength on herself and become stronger, it also means she can never be in love, she can never be intimate with anyone, which is very painful for her. But yet when she goes to try and get rid of her powers, and then finally, by the end of The Cure, realizes, no, it's actually the powers with their good points and their bad points that makes her who she is. And she wants to use them to make the world a better place. And she says, you know, there ain't no cure for who you are. I think that's just so powerful.
Yeah, I just want to pull on that thread really quickly, because Adrian, that episode that you were referring to about him giving that monologue about faith, it was also about forgiving his mother when she was about to throw him off a waterfall. And to see that,
level of forgiveness as a child. I mean, we're watching this when we're like 8 or 10. I mean, it just instilled a lot in us and gave us sort of a moral compass. And similarly with you, Lenore, I can't tell you how powerful it is to be sitting in front of the TV and hearing the words, there ain't no cure for who you are, at a time where you just, your brain wasn't fully developed. So I just want another round of applause for them on that. Because those performances were amazing. Truly. Questions? All right, let's get Cyclops right here and then we'll get to you in the back. Juggernaut in the back.
So it's already been said that when most people read the comics, you were the first that they hear. And I'm sad to hear that you didn't know that what you're doing in the original series. But now that you know that, and you're essentially the icon standing for the characters of how you put it, a new mythology, we live in the last couple decades of nostalgia and reboots and things that don't really meet up to where they should. But this show has proven to have the care, the writing, the passion, and it already talks about when they bring back these other shows, these important actors behind the characters that really meant something. How do you feel about hopefully that going all in the same right direction? And how do you feel about being kind of the icon that ushered that into hopefully a new wave of good nostalgia, good characters over time?
Thank you for that question. I got to say, first of all, we should be paying you because we've been living rent-free in your head. We've been living there for 30 years, rent-free. But, you know, I think, again, life has become so complicated in the sense that we are being bombarded by images that are so disturbing. The violence, the level of violence, the level of the malevolence, hatred, bigotry, all of this stuff, it's very hurtful and it's very painful for so many people. So I think the feeling of wanting to go back to nostalgia, something when life seemed a little simpler, where we were sitting in front of the TV, that old computer, eating cereals and waiting for that theme music to come on. I think that that's partly where that desire for nostalgia is coming from. So if we can provide any sense of comfort to people, I think that that's, I mean, I feel like fulfilled.
Yeah, you're here. I have nothing to add.
Juggernaut.
Thanks for the question.
Come on down, Juggernaut.
You broke my heart. I can't feel you broke my heart. Here, broke everyone's hearts. And also, the most recent episode, your chemistry is amazing. It felt like a brother and a sister.
Mm-hmm.
Just kudos for that. But I guess the question I want to ask is, what was the atmosphere in the studio when you guys were recording episode 5? What was it like?
Well, I thank you for all that. The thing is, we've been recording alone in the studio for, like, I've never been in the studio in this particular series with any other actors. We're good enough, and the scripts are good enough, but the writing is basically giving it all to us. I just know Lenore.
It was a couple of episodes for me. We were in the studio alone. Meredith is a brilliant director, and kudos to her. And I hope she wins awards for the series as well. And the writing, without the writing, we have nothing to go by. But I have shared this in a few different interviews that at the time when I did those episodes, my young niece had passed away at the age of 17, about 8 months before. And I just loved her so much. And part of the reason I had moved home to Nova Scotia was so I could watch my sister's kids grow up. And they were like toddlers when I moved home. And I taught her how to skate. And I was there for swimming lessons and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And thinking, I'm going to be part of her life. But I have two other nephews who are in their early 20s now. And so it was just really important for me to go home and be there for those kids after being away for a long time and traveling the world and being an actor and all that. So when she got cancer and we were told she had maybe a couple of months to live and that she may not even make it to Christmas that year, it broke me. You know, it broke me. And I remember going down into the basement of my house to find something. And my sister had stored some of my niece's dolls that I had bought her from New York. I bought her these American Girl dolls. And I would take them home. And she was so excited with all her little friends. And she had a birthday party at my house one time when she was like 8, turned 8. And I found the box of the toys, and she had put them all away, and she put all the little clothes in little sandwich bag wrappers, and she tidily put them all there. And I'm telling you, I fell on my knees, and I started sobbing. And I looked at my watch, and it was 4 hours later. It was so devastating. And so when I got that script of episode 5, my mind immediately went there. And I went, well, I don't have to do any emotional homework for this one. I've got it, I've done it. And so then I decided to just channel all of that pain and fear and rage and emptiness and, you know, all those feelings when somebody dies that you love. And I put it all into my voice so that other people could feel it and hear it. And hopefully it would resonate with them so that if they had gone through anything like that themselves, they would be able to recognize it as authentic. And I think that's what everybody's hearing in my voice. And then in the episode 7 with the rage, I mean, these are the stages of grief, right? These are the stages we go through. So it's coming from a pure place. And it was healing for me to be able to do that and channel that energy into something positive. And I hope that it has helped other people feel their feelings and express themselves. And as I say, it's okay to cry. It's good. I think it's healing. I think we're all deeply grieving a lot of stuff that's going on right now and that we've been through. And collectively, if we can do it together, that's a really positive thing. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Lenore, may I ask, what was your niece's name?
My niece's name was Maya, and she was adopted from China when she was 9 months old. And she was very well loved, and we miss her terribly.
I think we should dedicate this panel to Maya. Can we all say, poor Maya? Poor Maya. All right. Dazzler in the back? Is it Dazzler in the back? Emma Frost! Come on down, Emma. You have your runway.
I don't know if that answer came a little bit later, but how would one get started in this field? I've been told by many people to attend voice acting, but I'm like, and I know it's very difficult outside of Texas and California. So how would one get there?
First of all, I can see you've got a beautiful voice.
Great.
I can hear it. You got a gorgeous voice. Yeah. First of all, I would say the number one thing is you need to put a reel together. You need to put a voice demo together. If there is anybody, do you live here in Philadelphia?
No, but it's
okay. And you also live close to New Jersey, New York, DC. Look up and find out if there are any casting directors or directors or actors, voice actors, who are offering classes to help put a demo together, because you're going to need a demo. They want to hear that. They want to hear a reel. Usually, I would suggest 12 different characters within 3 minutes, not longer than 3 minutes, but just like quick hits of different types of characters, different accents, different ages. You know, the more variety you can show, the better. Yeah.
I wouldn't know how to let anyone get started. I started kind of by accident, but my thing when young people ask is, I just said, just get good, you know, keep on, read every day, watch and listen and copy. And sometimes when you copy something, you come up with something which is slightly different, which is your version of something. And stretch your voice. I mean, I spent 10 years in the UK so that I could speak with a perfect English accent. Well, several actually. You know, I've worked in various English accents, but for the first year, I sounded ridiculous. I sounded like someone who was trying to be English who wasn't really. And then you start listening for the subtle, you start like taking things apart and try and put them in your voice. And just try, you know, like Lenore says, try lots of different things. And it takes a while, you know, but already you have like this spectacular tone. There are voice actors out there who that's what they do, something inside of their particular vocal mass. You know, there's also the way of my friend Alan Marriott, who's a brilliant Canadian actor, he's living in the UK right now. A voice actor, and he teaches really well. He talks about the vocal mass, and he talks about the vocal gestures. Like, is a gesture, right? Or is a gesture, like Cal Dodd's gesture, like, you know, like the thing that, the find those and have like a little bag of those tricks so that when you get the opportunity, you go, oh, look, I have one of these to do, you know? So.
Yeah, and once you get the demo, then you would need to contact voice agents and ask them, can you send them your demo? And because you're going to need an agent to be able to represent you. It's so hard without that. It's hard when you have an agent, but you know, you're going to need that. But the demo is number one. You're welcome. Good luck.
We have time for one more question. Right there in the back with the jacket. I think I saw your hand first. Wolverine.
Yeah. So this is the question for both of you. When we were doing work with Kavanaugh for the Marvel versus games, was it much different for you than you were working with for the X-Men and Spider-Man? Was it much different because you weren't working on a table read or being brought in to read certain lines?
Which the video game? I only did the one, like. So, I mean, I it was a long time ago. So, are you talking about the mocap, the performance capture? No.
I'm talking about more of the Capcom.
The Street Fighter. Street Fighters.
I have a vague little memory back there, standing there and then have to do fight sounds.
Well, I have a question for you, though, where you were working as Tatum. Oh. Where did you motion capture?
You remember that?
I remember that. That was only 12 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Like it was last decade. Shall I get you an answer?
To be honest, it's no different than just doing the regular voice stuff. Yeah. It's just that you have pages and pages and pages of fight sounds.
Yeah.
You know, when we do the show, obviously we do a lot of fighting and stuff. But
barks,
what are they called?
Barks.
Barks.
Like barks.
Okay, I've heard that one. But yeah, so it's like that, but there's just more of it. There's just a ton more of it. And they want to get you in every different possible sound so that they can then pull from it.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's fun. It's like being a kid again and, you know, using your imagination and just making those sounds that we used to do when we were kids, when it was like, it was okay. And we get paid for it. So it's really kind of fun.
Well, that's fun.
It is.
I mean, the last Assassin's Creed I did, I haven't seen it, but I think it's almost not a virtual reality one. It has all these characters in it. Most of my session was just doing heavy breathing, like you're running really fast. Now you're running slower. like by the end of it, like I had lift. But just briefly touch upon the performance capture. I think we coined that term back when we were doing it. The technology was really advancing, you know, and while we were doing it, like partway through the recording of it, we recorded in a volume with like 100 cameras all the way around and with the cameras on our face and dots, and they had these helmets. And when we started recording, there was these large, like huge bundle of cables coming out of the back of our heads. So they had to hire someone to sort of follow us around if we were like circling each other, and they'd like make sure the cables didn't cross. And partway through, it was like suddenly it was a remote. But the main thing about performance capture is you have to have a really good imagination. So I would say, well, what's out there? What's that? What am I looking at? So you're standing on top of a roof and you're looking down over the city and there's other soldiers. And so it's just like shooting a movie, but in your head. And you don't get to see the place. You have to imagine the place.
Thank you for that question. All right. One final question for you guys. Adrian, are you terrified that Mystique may rear her ugly head in X-Men 97? How terrified are you to see Mom again?
I was traumatized when I was very young, but I have to give it. I don't know. I can't comment. Like, you know, we sign these like 11-page things that say you have to give away your firstborn and your left kidney. Don't let that do anything. Or you intubate that. So, so that's why I gave it as a character improv. That's going to be fun. Let's see.
Lenore. What was it? Oh, go.
Oh, you said okay.
No, what was it like throwing Captain America's shield?
It was a blast. I loved every minute of it. That was so much fun. And I couldn't say anything ahead of time either that this was coming. But I knew, and I was waiting to see what the fan reaction would be. And I'm thrilled to see people liked it.
Did we like it?
Thank you. What's that?
That's a watcher right there. You were at Genosha.
Right on. Yeah, and you know what? I've watched that episode 3 times, and I still haven't seen the watcher. I have to look at it again. I mean, the fans. The fans saw the first time. It's amazing. Like they just went. I think I saw the watcher. I was like, they do that.
All right, Adrian, Lenore, what projects do you have coming up, and where can folks find you on social media?
Okay, I just did 3 guest stars in a row. One of them is in a Hallmark movie, The Secrets of Mystery Lane 2. I play a Cockney suspect. And then my episode of The Good Doctor is about to air. I'm one of the patients of the week. And that's that. I think it's available from streaming on the 30th, which is a couple of days. And I just had an episode of The Irrational, you know, that Jesse L. Martin series.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
And on social media, I'm Real Adrian Huff on Instagram. This is a picture of me from like years ago, looking very youthful and pretty.
You are still very pretty, right, guys?
AD800 on Twitter. So,
are you 800?
I'm 800 years old.
Thank you. I have an animated feature film that I did that is a musical that's coming out for children, coming out in 2025. We've already recorded it. It's called Space Bears. And it's about these little bears from outer space who go around to the universe trying to save dying planets and teaching their inhabitants to protect and preserve the environment. Oh. It's so cute. Yeah, so it's going to be really good. That's in 2025. And I just found that I'm doing a role in a movie, shooting it in L.A., next week, actually, and it's by Bat in the Sun.
We love Aaron.
But, yeah, so you might have heard of a movie they're doing called the Legend of the White Dragon.
Yeah,
right, with Jason David Frank. Well, I'm gonna have a role in that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a small role at the beginning of the film, but it's a scene that they've added. They just wrote it. And he called me and asked me if I would be in it. And actually, they're the ones who did Space Bears as well.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun.
All right, folks. X-Men 97, every Wednesday. Round of applause for Adrian and Lenore.
Oh, Instagram. I forgot. Sorry. Follow me on Instagram at Lenore Zann, LenoreZann, or Twitter X at Zann Lenore. And keep an eye out for my book, The A Rogue's Tale, coming out next
fall. Are pre-order links up already?
Not yet.
Okay,
no, cool. No. They will be, and it'll be available on Amazon. So, and keep an eye out for, I've got an album that will be coming out too called Strong Enough. But I'll be posting about that on my social media, so if you follow me, and you'll know. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate being here. You've all been great. Yeah.